you do that?
This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
Funny how that works. Amy, if you wouldn't mind picking roll, that would be great.
I'd be happy to. That's us.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Lozar.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Sheehy.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Berkey.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Johnstone.
Here.
Regent Nystuen.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Albrecht.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Christian is
I'm here.
On the way. Do we have a representative from the governor's office?
This is Siri. I'm here.
Thank you. And a representative from the superintendent's office?
Superintendent is here.
Oh.
I'm here. This is Elsie. Good morning.
Thank you, Elsie. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Amy, and thanks to everybody for joining us today. This is a conference call that is scheduled for 2 hours. I don't know if it will take that long, but we do have a block of time through about 12:30 scheduled. So, again, thank you for being with us this morning. Everybody has received the agenda for today, and so let's just dive in here and we'll note that there are three items on the consent agenda. Is there any desire by any region to pull any item from the consent agenda this morning? There does not appear to be any interest in doing that, and so is there a motion to approve the three items on today's consent agenda?
So moved by Regent Sheehy.
You've heard the motion. Is there any comment from other members of the board, from campuses, or the public? Comments? Any comments? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes. Thank you. We're now down to action item A, which is distribution of timber sales revenue from OGIE. Commissioner, can we have you kick this off?
Mr. Chair, although we're not in the same spot, Frieda's in Missoula today, but I believe Frieda's going to speak to this item on behalf of OGIE.
Thank you. Frieda?
Yes, I'm here. This is Frieda with OGIE reporting from Missoula. And the timber sale revenue item is an action item because state law requires that the Board of Regents, once a biennium, designate the timber sale proceeds from the Montana University System lands be distributed. And so we're requesting that it continue to be distributed. And we have a longstanding board policy since 2002 that directs the campuses how to use that fund. And then attachment two is a breakdown of the actual collection of that timber revenue. Some of the reasons for the and in the revenue between years. And so with that, we're asking for the regents to take a formal action on this to approve.
And Mr. Chair, just so our board members know, I believe that the decision, the reason you need to take action on this, the decision is you can either distribute the earnings to the campuses, which is what we've done as far back in time as maybe forever, or your other option as a board is that you could direct the funds into the corpus, something we haven't done. But I want you to know the reason it's in front of you is to make that decision.
Thank you. And Frieda, thank you for that description of this action item. Is there discussion amongst members of the board? Any discussion? Is there a motion to approve this action item?
So moved, Regent Albrecht. Move to approve.
Yes. You've heard the motion by Regent Albrecht. Is there further discussion on this item by members of the board, the campuses, or the public? Further comment? Any further comment? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion passes. Action item B is request for authorization to issue Series D 2017 refunding revenue bonds from MSU Bozeman. Who will be speaking to this item?
Mr. Chair, we'd ask Frieda to make a couple opening comments, and then I believe Laura Humberger from the Bozeman campus is going to give you some more details.
Thank you. Frieda?
Yes, this is Frieda. I just wanted to point out that OCHE has reviewed this item, and a couple of the key points related to the refunding of the revenue bonds are that there aren't any state funds or tuition dollars that are used in the repayment of these bonds. The refunding will be at a fixed rate. It will not extend the due date of the original bonds, and we will realize a savings, and that savings will depend on when the purchase is made. And at this time, unless there's any questions, I would turn it over to Laura Humberger at MSU to explain in more detail.
Thank you, Frieda. Laura?
Hi there. For the record, I'm Laura Humberger, last name spelled H-U-M-B-E-R-G-E-R, Associate Vice President for Financial Services at MSU Bozeman. Chairman Tess, members of the board, thank you. And thank you, Frieda. Frieda hit the highlights of the board item, which is wonderful. As noted, I'll just pull out a couple of points. As noted in item four, when we wrote this item, we expected that we could save about $800,000 or a net present value savings of nearly 5%, and that would be through refunding approximately $19 million of the existing debt. We won't be extending the due date of this. This is similar to a home refinance where we refinance for same term, and we aren't borrowing any additional funds. The interesting thing about this is that there is good news that is actually not reflected in this item that we'd like your help addressing. Since we prepared this, of course, rates have moved around in the last several weeks, and hot off the presses, this week's numbers actually indicate that we could save up to $1.2 million if we refinanced closer to $30 million of the debt rather than $20 million. So, I spoke with Deputy Commissioner Trevor this morning, and he has actually suggested that it would be appropriate if the board so desires and is in favor of this item in the first place, to also offer some friendly amendments to increase the amount that we're authorized to refund to ensure that we could take full advantage of any market changes that have occurred since we prepared this and that might still occur between now and an actual bond issuance, which, you know, will take a few weeks to put together. So I obviously entertain any questions on the original item, and then further, if you'd like to discuss what we might do, the I think small changes that might need to take place, change the item slightly. And just one final point, what this item does is authorize the commissioner, the chair of the board, and the president and vice president of MSU to execute the documents necessary for the refunding. So they would be the ones actually signing the documents, and that is signified through adopting the attachment, which is the bond resolution. And with that, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you for that explanation, and I think from a technical perspective, I think maybe, and Commissioner, you can speak to this as well, I think that the motion that would be in order when we get to that point would be a motion to amend the item from the $20 million figure that we have in front of us to the $30 million figure that you just described. Commissioner, is that procedurally how we should move forward with this, if indeed that's the desire of the board?
Mr. Chair, that's exactly how you should move forward. You'd offer the amendment first to change the item, and then after that vote would again take action on the item then, so you'll have two votes if you go that route. And we are very supportive from this office of that change if the board sees fit.
Thank you, Commissioner. Perhaps before we get there, however, we should have I should call for any conversation or discussion on the item itself, on the item. Is there any conversation on the substance of this item?
Mr. Chair, this is Regent Eisden.
Yes, Regent Eisden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Commissioner, where would this debt be placed? Is this going private placement, or is it going to go through like D.A. Davidson and the through their bond department? Where does this debt get placed if it's refinanced?
Mr. Chairman, Regent Eisden, this is Laura Humberger speaking. We are currently anticipating a public debt issuance, and our underwriter, we have recently extended the contract with our underwriter, and it's Wells Fargo. So that would be an underwritten deal through Wells Fargo on parity with our existing debt.
This is Bill Johnstone. I have a procedural question, and then I'll make a comment on the proposed amendment. On the procedural question, as I read the documents, Wells Fargo is the underwriter, and you have a contract. My only concern is relative to whether I have a conflict of interest. Is D.A. Davidson either party to the underwriting agreement, or has D.A. Davidson been advised as a consultant to the university in connection with this transaction?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, no, D.A. Davidson is not involved in this transaction.
Thank you. All right, then, relative to the proposal to amend it, would the amendment include the assumption that there would be a net present value savings under any refunding of at least 3%? Is that the guideline that you're following?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, yes, that is not anticipated to change. As stated in item 4 of the board item, we would expect a net present value savings in excess of 3%, which is the recommended threshold.
With that understanding, I would be supportive of increasing the amount to not exceed $30 million, with the understanding that there would have to be at least a 3% net present value savings.
Regent Johnstone, is that in the form of a motion?
It would be. I guess it would be an amendment of the existing.
Thank you. You've heard the motion. Is there additional conversation or comment on this item?
Chair, Regent Sheehy has a question.
Yes, Regent Sheehy.
I think I want to talk to Laura. Laura, you've talked about fluctuations in the market and the timing of the purchase and who has the right to move forward on the purchase, how we're going to execute it. How much control do we have over the timing once this is passed? I'm reading this through and I'm not sure that there's a deadline for us to act. Do we have a little bit of control about when we jump into the new market? And what is the window that you talked about between the decision to do this and the actual bond issuance?
Mr. Chairman, Regent Sheehy, thank you. This is, there are a couple things we look at with respect to timing. If this item is approved, we will have a kickoff call with the bond underwriter, the bond counsel, and something like this takes a minimum of a couple weeks to figure out and finalize. We need to have our credit rating updated, so there is a delay in terms of what we need to get done from a logistical perspective. Once we decide that it's time and we're ready, then we have some bookends. We have some market data coming out in June that we'd like to actually avoid. So we want to issue these before that market data comes out, and I'm not remembering the exact date, but it's, I think, towards the end of the first week of June. So we'd like to get these issued before then. Now, if something crazy happens, we would not do the deal. We need to realize our net present value savings of at least 3%. It needs to be worth our while. So, you know, the market timing from that perspective is something that Wells Fargo and our financial advisors would help us determine. But right now we're looking at before the first week of June due to some market data that's supposed to come out.
Thank you, Laura.
Caritas, this is Casey. I had a question for either Tyler or for Laura on the parameters around this, identifying the $30 million for the new issuance, going from 20 to 30. Can you speak to why 30 and let's say not 25 or 35?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, it's interesting. When we first prepared this item, I want to say it was a month ago, I thought I had left ample room by bumping it up to 20 because we were really looking at about 16 or 17 that we thought we might refund. The reason that this is sensitive to interest rates is because the Series M part of this is not callable. So what that means is we've got to set aside enough funds in escrow to pay that debt and pay the interest on it as it comes due. We can't just currently refund it and pay it all like we can with a portion of it, which is the Series K debt. So the Series K debt, which is only about $8 million of this, we know exactly what's happening. It's callable. The rest of it, for the Series M portion, that's the part that's pretty sensitive to interest rates because we have to park enough in escrow to fund the debt service until we can call it in 2021. So we've got a few years that we need to be certain we can put funds away in escrow to pay the remaining debt until it's callable. That's why this is jumping up and down a little bit. And as those current rates versus the longer-term rates change, the relationship between a net present value savings of 3% and not 3% can change rapidly.
So what is the principal balance of Series K and C together?
Yeah, so we've got Series K is roughly $8 million. Actually, it's probably closer to 9, sorry. And right now, Series C, we're drawing on that. That's a drawdown bond. We're drawing on that currently. And we've drawn roughly $10 million. I'm taking that back. $16 million. We're darn close to drawing all of the $16 million of Series C. So that figure is moving around every quarter as we spend money. We wouldn't anticipate refunding all of that. It's a very attractive rate for the longer-term pieces of that. That's 2.92%, but it's for 15 years. So some of the earlier maturities of that one we think would be a good candidate, maybe up to $10
million. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sorry that was a bit of a gory detail.
Is there other conversation about the gory details? Is there further conversation about Regent Johnstone's motion? Conversation?
Chairman Tess, this is Laura Humberger. I would like to seek clarification. I am hoping that the amendment motion includes altering the attachment. Bond resolution itself would also need to be changed from 20 to 30 million, and that is the piece of this that actually gives legal authority to the commissioner's office to go ahead.
Yes, it was my understanding that it would indeed do that.
Thank you.
Further conversation? You've heard the motion by Regent Johnstone to amend this item from $50 million to $30 million. That is what we'll be voting on now, and then there will be a subsequent call for a motion on the item itself, to approve the item itself. Is there any additional comments from members of the board or campuses or the public? Further comments?
This is Martha again.
Yes, Martha.
I just want to clarify that everywhere $20 million appears in this item will now be $30 million should we pass the motion. Is that correct?
That is my understanding, correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Is there further comments? Further comments? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries, and action item B has been amended. Is there now a motion to approve the amended action item B?
Regent Nystuen moves.
You've heard the motion by Regent Nystuen. Is there further conversation by members of the board? Further conversation? Is there further conversation by campuses or the public on this item? Further conversation? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, no. The motion carries. Thank you. We're now on to action item C, request for authorization to repair and replace outdoor track surface, MSU Bozeman. Who'll be speaking to this?
Mr. Chair, Ron Muffick will get us started here anyway, and then if there's further questions, we can look to the campus.
Okay, thank you. Ron?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this item requests authorization to repair and replace the outdoor track surface at Montana State University Bozeman. Track surface is deteriorating and requires repair, replacement, and modification in order to meet current athletic program, university, and community demands and to be used safely. The requested authority is $1,250,000, with the funding coming from private donations, which have already been secured. State funds needed for operation or maintenance going forward. We bring this item to you now in order to get the project completed over the summer before the weather turns in the fall as cold temperatures cause issues with the surface application and curing process. Vice President of Administration and Finance at MSU Bozeman, Terry Leitz, I'll answer any specific questions you have, and we ask for your authorization to proceed with this project, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ron. If any additional comments necessary from MSU Bozeman?
Mr. Chair, this is Terry Leist, Vice President for Administration and Finance. I appreciate Ron introducing this item. This project is ready to go. We've had some bubbling issues with that track for a number of years. It has required a lot of patching, and we've had some analysis done on that. Part of the issue was originally that track actually was finished up in October, and that may have been what caused this issue. So we're trying to get an early start on it this time, and a very generous donor has stepped up to pay for the entire project. And as Ron indicated, we do have those funds in hand, and we will start as soon as next week or the week after, and finish by late August or early September if the board desires to approve this item. And for any other questions you might have.
I would move approval of the item, Chair.
Is that Regent Nystuen?
Johnstone.
Regent Johnstone, thank you very much for that motion. You've heard motion by Regent Johnstone. Regents, is there additional comment or conversation by members of the board or the campuses or the public on this item? Any additional comments? Additional comments? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you. We're now at the portion of the agenda that will perhaps most assuredly take up most of our time during our conference call today. And with that, Commissioner, I'm going to have you lead off the conversation about information item A, budget development update.
Mr. Chair, if we could, it's your pleasure, but I would suggest that we maybe move the Montana Guaranteed Student Loan update ahead of this. Just it's a very important item. I think it's important that the board the time with it, although it won't take too much, but I'd like to do that first if we could, just so it doesn't get lost in the larger discussion around the budget.
And Commissioner, without objection, let's do that. Let's move item B up to item A, and please proceed.
Okay. Mr. Muffick will speak to the changes to the Guaranteed Student Loan Plan program.
Ron?
All right. Mr. Chair, members of the board, as Clay mentioned, this is an update on our activities of the Guaranteed Student Loan Program. As you know, GSL is a program within the Commissioner's Office and has administered the student loan program in Montana from 1980 until 2010. In 2010, the student loan system was centralized by the federal government and state participation was eliminated. So in the last 7 years, GSL has not initiated any new loans, and all new loans have been done by the direct loan program under the federalized system. GSL has been working out the remainder of their loan portfolio over the last 7 years, and they've seen a reduction of the portfolio by 50% just from loans paying off. We've been monitoring GSL's sustainability, cash flow, and glide path to determine the lifespan of the program and the issues brought on by the shrinking portfolio to determine the best time to exit the program. In addition to that, in the last year, the ability to wind down or exit the program has become more constricted by the federal government, and so we see a limited window to make any significant changes to GSL. Other states our size have moved forward with the transferring of their portfolio to other large national guarantors, states including South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, Arkansas, and Washington, that are similar states to our setup. With all that considered, and all the analysis we've been conducting over the last 7 years, we are looking to transfer our portfolio to a national servicer as well. The servicer is determined by the federal government, and we have a target date of September 30th. This will eliminate about 25 positions within the Guaranteed Student Loan Program. The upside is it will also eliminate any future liabilities for us, and it will not affect current students' access to student loans. Because all the loans are done directly by the feds now. Staff has been notified of our intent, and the portfolio transfer will be coordinated between our office, the Department of Education, and the successor guarantor, and we've been assured that we can make the September 30th date. So it's a situation where we have been trying to determine the lifespan and sustainability of GSL, and we think we're at the point now where it's reached its limit. There's a lot of risk out there if we continue with significant financial losses in the future if we don't make a move. So with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ron. Any questions, members of the board?
I just have one, Chairman, if I could.
Ron, yes.
Do we have any potential liability in excess of the reserves or the funds that the GSL has, or are we satisfied that we'll be able to affect the transaction without incurring any liability?
Mr. Chair, Regent Johnstone, at this time we don't believe we will have any additional liability. That's one of the reasons we want to make the move. As we look at trending, if we kept GSL afloat for 2, 3, 4 more years, I think we would be in a much different situation where we would potentially have some liability out there. Right now we have enough of our reserves to cover any concerns such as payouts of employees. There's some technical funds that we have to provide to the federal government going forward to cover any refunds, that sort of thing. We have the funds now. We may not in 2020 or 2021.
Will there likely be any excess remaining after all the liabilities are covered or not?
Mr. Chair, Regent Johnstone, I'd hate to speculate on that right now because there are some conversion costs that we're looking at for converting the portfolio. As I mentioned, some payouts for employees for accrued annual leave and sick leave and such. And when we've been having our conversations with the federal government, they are quite concerned about us having enough in our, call it default aversion fee fund, which is a new issue for us as far as being able to determine what the liabilities would be for that. And we're still working through that with the feds right now. So I would suspect there will be some funds remaining. Right now, I'd hate to put a number out there.
Thank you.
Chair Tutts, this is Casey. I have a question.
Yes.
Ron, how might this transfer to a new national servicer impact the experience on the existing borrowers in our portfolio, and what types of things will you do to communicate with them this transition if we decide to move forward?
Mr. Chair, Regent Lozar, we looked at that as a consideration when we were looking at the potential of exiting the program. And in our conversations with the Department of Education, we've identified one national guarantor that we would be satisfied with if the portfolio were moved to them based on our 16-year relationship with that national guarantor. That guarantor provided GSL its servicing system for the last 16 years, so we're familiar with their level of customer service that they provide to us and to their student borrowers. So we're comfortable that they will continue to provide excellent service similar to what our staff provided.
Thanks, Ron.
Additional comments or questions from members of the board?
This is Fran. Can you speak to the timeline for such a transition? Ron?
Mr. Chair, Regent Albrecht, we're aiming for a September 30th date. The date is determined based on the federal fiscal year ending on September 30th. It's cleaner for us to close out our books and for the federal government to aid us in the transition. It's going to be a process where because the system that the loans are being transferred to is the same system that we are on, it's not going to be as difficult of a process. So both the Department of Education and the successor guarantor have assured us that we will get it done by September 30th. There might be two or three months of a limited number of employees after that fact doing some cleanup, some audit, and final reporting. But for the most part, the program, what services being provided will cease as of September 30th this year.
Thank you, Ron. Are there additional comments or questions from members of the board? Additional comments? Hearing none. Ron, thank you very much. Commissioner, let's proceed to information item B, budget development update.
Mr. Chair, keeping with board policy, our policy suggests that we will set commission and fees in odd number of years following the legislative session, and that's timing is important because it's very hard to set our entire budgets until we know what the state appropriations is going to be. Certainly with the conclusion of the session last Friday, we now have those numbers. We have been modeling and planning. I really do commend Tyler, Frieda, and others around the system. This is by far the earliest that we've had a snapshot of where we think we're going to be. And while this still remains somewhat valuable, I think we've received feedback in the past that simply bringing it to the May meeting and making the decision doesn't leave a lot of time for input from students, parents, families, others around the system. And so we wanted to get at least the update piece out there, and we'll make available what we think will be presented in May to the public. We're not a long ways off, but we're before our sessions end at all of our campuses, and so it'll give an opportunity for a preview and some feedback regards to tuition and fees and where we think we're headed. So I want to get a little ways into the detail, but we will probably stay somewhat at a system level. Although we'll have more campus-specific stuff available, and we'll try to answer questions, and we will certainly look forward to receiving feedback over the next couple weeks. Mr. Chair, if I could, I would ask Tyler to kind of walk us through what will be a high-level overview of but will be a much more comprehensive presentation at the May 24th, 25th meeting.
Yes, please. Deputy Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I have four topics. I'll briefly hit on each one of them. The first one is the budget overview and the status of where we're at based on post-legislative session. The next will be the recommendations in general that we bring related to tuition and fees and the distribution of state appropriations. A quick comment then about the process that we've gone through since the March board meeting. And then finally, touch upon the topic of expense and cost control in the university system. So with that said, I dive into the budget overview. And inside of this, I'm going to make basically four statements here and then give you some comments about each one of those. So the first statement is that the $14.6 million that we need to add to FY17 based upon present law adjustments and the need to fund the pay plan established our FY18 goal for our budget. So as much as I depend upon PowerPoint, imagine in your mind this beautiful PowerPoint I'd be talking about that would show you $484 million total of current unrestricted funds for FY17 that right next to it converts into a larger bar, which would be our budget goal for FY18, essentially adding $13.3 million to that in present law adjustments and $1.3 million needed for a pay plan in FY18. That goal of FY18 is a 3% increase by 17, and it assumes flat enrollment. That is statement number one. Statement number two, following the legislative session, lack of funding for present law adjustments combined with a 2% cut from the into our budget creates an $18.8 million hole for the university system. That hole comprised of four factors. One that I already mentioned is the $13.3 million in present law adjustments. We had anticipated going into the session that we would fund a portion of that, 60% to be precise, on the tuition side, and hopefully that the state would pick up the other 40%. That did not happen. Combined with that, we received a 2.1% cut in FY18, a larger cut in 19, but we'll stick with 18 for right now, of equaling $4.1 million. We have a pay plan that we need to cover, and we received generous funding in the legislative session for this, although we still have about a $300,000 liability on the tuition side there. And now we know enrollment projections, which are very conservatively coming in at negative 2% for residents and positive 1% for non-residents, equaling basically another $1 million. You total those together, it's $18.8 million. So that's statement number two. Statement number three is that we're recommending tuition increases in the amount that would produce a cumulative 4.5% increase to our overall tuition revenue. That increase will represent, when combined with our state appropriations, a 2% increase to FY18 budget, but will still leave us $5 million short of the goal I just spoke of. So that's statement number three. And four, for FY19, we're recommending a 2.7% increase over FY18. Without a more detailed explanation of what our goal for FY19 is, other than present law on top of what we received for FY18 and the present law we needed in FY18, we will still be $1.6 million short of the goal. So I guess to sum that up, we've set a goal based upon our present law, May of 2016, at that time estimating that we would receive flat enrollment. That goal being 3% higher in FY18 is a mark that we shot for through the governor's budget, through the legislative session, combined with state appropriations, and now adding in our tuition increases, we estimate that we will be $5 million short of that goal, or a 2% increase over FY17. Mr. Chair, I'd stop and pause there for a second, fully realizing that I've I kind of unleashed a whole set of numbers on a group of people that are not all looking at the same thing. I intend to, at the May meeting, to do a more thorough job of explaining exactly where we're at, but as for this call goes, that's about as good of a job I'm going to be able to do related to the budget overview.
Thank you. Let me turn it over to members of the board. Are there questions of Tyler on this information?
This is Regent Sheehy. Tyler, could you repeat the lack of the statement number two and the four items?
Okay. You bet. The lack of funding for present law adjustments combined with a 2% cut creates an $18.8 million hole in FY18. And there's four reasons why that happens. We received no funding for present law adjustments, and that totals $13.3 million. In combination with that, we received a 2.1% cut to our state appropriation. That's $4.1 million. We also need to cover a pay plan. I can explain the details of that pay plan, but in the first year of the biennium, it will equate to about $1.3 million for our ED units, and we received $1 million of that in funding, so we have $300,000. And finally, we now know our enrollment projections, and after taking those into consideration for FY18, we see a slight decline there in tuition revenue of $1 million. Totaling that all together is $18.8 million. Of a whole.
Okay. Chair Tutt, this is Casey.
That's Regent Lozar.
Yeah. Tyler, in regards to those four items, three of them are very black and white in terms of where we landed coming out of the legislature, the PLA, the cut, and the pay plan. Can you speak a little more to the enrollment projections and sort of that process that you went through to come up with that 2% reduction in resident and 1% increase for non-residents?
Mr. Chair, Regent Lozar, yes, I can. Those projections are basically rolled-up projections from the 8 ED units in the university system. So starting last summer, where the budget officers were asked to project enrollment in conjunction with their institutional research officers, and we begin collecting those for the next biennium. They're used to, first to calculate present law adjustments that we produced, and then they are fine-tuned over the fiscal year, so the current fiscal year we're in. Following the March board meeting, I asked for an updated request to the campuses to update those enrollment projections. They're based on a much more detailed level than just resident and non-resident. The data that I get, it's by level and by obviously residency over the next biennium. So I guess to sum it up is those are incremental projections by each campus that are then rolled up at the system level.
I think, though, Regent Lozar, you certainly hit the challenging part of a budgeting process, and that enrollment will remain an estimate until we certify it in the fall of 17.
Yeah, and in the fall of 17 will give us our first look at what 18 will be, but it won't be until we combine
right.
it with spring and then report it to you at the May meeting, just like we will the FY17 data coming up here at our May meeting.
But I am very confident that this is, believe it or not, one of the first times we've really ever aggregated these projections up to a system level. And I think a lot of thought has went into those. They're a critical component to making a reasonable estimate. While it is an estimate, I think we've put as much thought behind those as we can.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Regent Nystuen.
Yes, Regent Nystuen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Commissioner. The Budget Committee has obviously, you know, digested a little of this in advance of this conversation today. And during our conversation in the Budget and Audit Committee, we noted that, you know, $13.3 million of the $18.8 million hole is a present law adjustment. And one of the questions, I think it came from Regent Johnstone, says, how can we get comfortable with the present law adjustment assumptions? You know, what is actually variable and can be trimmed, and what is contractual that we're obligated to pay that? So could you give us some texture as to how we might dive into that, since it represents almost three quarters of the whole we're talking about today?
Mr. Chair, Regent Nystuen, this is Tyler. I'll take the first shot at that. Let's just break down what's inside that $13 million to begin with. Right out of the chute, about $4 million of that is related to statewide fixed cost increases. Those are calculated just like they would be calculated for any other department in state agency or any other state agency. We then have a portion of it that's related to higher education-specific cost increases, library holdings, unique type of IT systems that we have related to the campuses and the students we have in those communities. And then finally, not finally, but in addition to that, is the annualization of the pay plan going forward into FY18. And this creates a significant hole for us and a very definitive one at that. Those pay increases that we instituted in FY17 have to be bled into the base in FY18, and we were dependent upon our present law adjustments in order to be able to do that. Associated with that are contractual obligations that we have with unions and the type of employees that we have that are unique to higher education, faculty, and their tenure status, as one example. And then finally, with these campus communities that we have outstanding issues that require attention related to compliance and safety of our students that wrap up that $13.3 million. We also have campus folk that are on the call and ready and willing to address individual present law amounts at their campuses. We've asked them these exact same questions, and we're confident that that $13.3 million has very little variable amount associated to it.
Thank you.
Additional questions?
Chair Tusk, this is Regent Johnstone.
Yes.
Tyler, could you provide us a little bit of color context relative to the overall approach that the campuses took with respect to other expense management? What do the budgets reflect relative to that, and what were the conversations concerning the question of expense management?
Mr. Chair, Regent Johnstone, I sure can. And I think in order to do that, we got to have a little bit of perspective here on the last 3 or 4 years related to campuses reducing their budgets. And so if we looked at some numbers related to a few of our campuses, the University of Montana has decreased its expenditures from FY15 to FY17 by $10 million. The budget that we're recommending for them in FY18 is actually $2 million lower than that, so there's $12 million of expense reduced there. Billings actually is another campus that highlight that, and although the dollar amounts aren't as high, their percents are larger. From FY15 to 17, they reduced by $4 million. This budget that we have going forward for them in FY18 is $600,000 in addition to that of a cost reduction. So while those aren't specific examples of what they're doing to get to that level, I think you need to have some of that as a context to where these campuses are to begin with. In terms of holding down the costs, I think that starts with the present law scrutiny that we put the campuses through, and the detailed review of these. Starting in May of 2016, we hired Global Insight to help us come up with our projected cost increases if needed. And although you can always say we should spend more time focusing on those, I think that the campuses individually have looked inward to find ways to control their costs. I don't have the history related to the requests that we put out, let's say, a year ago, specifically to those campuses, but that's probably the best explanation I'm going to be able to give.
Could you also, Tyler, I think historically we've done some comparison of our cost per student or whatever the relevant metric is, our cost versus the cost of peer institutions and systems that we compare ourselves to. Can you maybe refresh us on how we stand relative to that?
Mr. Chair, Regent Johnstone, I'd be happy to, and that is a highlighted point that we used with the legislature throughout in answering this very question. So in the amount of total current unrestricted funds per student, we're 48th in the nation. Often throughout the legislative session, we talked about what we would look like if we received X amount of cut. Our cut was twice the amount of that we ended up receiving at one point in time, and we quickly speculated that that would put us to last in the nation, although those states that we're comparing ourselves to are also went through the same process we are, so it's, of course, still a speculation, but I think one that you could easily conclude. The other metric that we often use was state support per resident student and comparing individual campuses to peers. One of the campuses you'll see in our budget recommendations that has one of the stronger budgets going forward is the one that we often compared, and that was Montana State University in terms of state support per resident student being last in the West compared to other land-grant universities by quite a long shot, almost half the amount of state support per student. So I think it's fairly easy to conclude that when you look at the overall funds that we expend for higher education in Montana, we run a very, very tight ship.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions?
Paul, this is Levi. I have a quick question. So, Tyler, on that presentation that you sent out to the regents beforehand, I noticed that for FY18, you made the recommendation that we're expecting about 1% increase in non-resident. And then in FY19, it moves up to 2.7. Can you explain that number a little bit more? If we are expecting more students to come in FY19, why are we going to be more aggressive in recruiting strategies, or why is that the case?
Mr. Chair, Regent Berkey, so now we're going to delve into a little bit more detail on the enrollment projections, and those are, again, driven by individual campuses. I think we really, to get to the answer on that, you'd have to break it down into its components. I can do that right now, although it's going to be a difficult description campus by campus, but I think my answer there for you on the higher level is it really depends on what campus we're talking about, the amount of students on that campus, and how they influence the overall projection. And all of that will be presented in May, and it will also be in the detail made public following this meeting. But as a lot of what you'll hear, and when I talk about the recommendations here, is that our not only our recommendations, but obviously our enrollment projections and kind of the outcome that you have of all this, is it varies by campus, by level, by residency, and by year.
Additional comments or questions?
Chair Tuss, are we at a point where it's appropriate to ask questions relative to tuition, or do we need, are we still waiting for that?
No, I think it's entirely appropriate, Regent Johnstone.
Mr. Chair, if we could, why don't we move through the recommendation part of this? We kind of had four bullets. We've just got through one. I think if we get Tyler to move through the other ones, it'll add a little clarity, and then we can ask questions once you've seen it all.
Okay. That's fine, Commissioner. Please proceed then.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, so let's dive into the recommendations related to tuition and mandatory fees. There's three primary recommendations or principles. The first is to remove the lower/upper division rate differences for each campuses, for each campus. The second is to level tuition and fee rates by campus and mission type to the extent possible within the biennium. and the third is to hold increases to mandatory fees flat. And let me make a comment here on each one of these. The movement from lower to upper, very simple, clarity of price, and it is key to leveling by mission. The leveling by mission provides us with a coherent, simplified framework for tuition and fees based upon mission type that allows us not only to communicate more clearly to the public a framework of higher education in our state and the costs of that higher education, but also relate those tuition revenue to state appropriations. And then on the fees, the focus coming out of a legislative session where we have cuts, we do not have present law adjustments, is the need for tuition revenue to create sustainable operations. And then two more quick comments. Throughout the presentation of this information, you'll see as we release it, you'll be looking, and I'm speaking to students, the media, campuses, for the percent increase by campus. What is the undergraduate percent increase at a given campus to tuition? And I just wanted to preface this by saying, whenever we make this comparison, we're giving you the full academic tuition and fee rate. So we use those rates when we compare, for instance, MSU to its peers. We're also using those rates when we compare the increases year over year. These make up at times between 25 to 35% of the overall cost, and that is key to our overall recommendation of freezing fees and increasing tuition. The resulting growth is measured off the cumulative amount of tuition and fees. And then finally, as I've stated before, that these variations that we have are the result of everything that I mentioned above. There is no single answer in this system to how much is tuition increasing. Again, it varies by campus, by level, by residency, and by year. Two more areas I need to hit on the recommendations before we open up the discussion here. Key to these recommendations are the allocation of state appropriations, which have been done in concert with the development of the rates, the projection of enrollment, and the generation of tuition revenue to come up with budgets for campuses based upon mission parameters that more closely move those campuses, although albeit slowly, and hopefully over the next 6 years or 10 years, towards their peers. With that, we allocated state appropriations in this biennium identical to 17 distributions with a few exceptions, and I can speak to those exceptions. We recommend to the board that we distribute $15 million of this state appropriation in each year of the biennium through our performance funding model. And then finally, the third sector of recommendations relate to individual course fees, program fees, and setting of room and board. Those individual amounts you will not find on the presentation that we will link immediately following this meeting. However, we are still in the process of collecting individual detailed information from each campus that will be presented in coherent packages by campus for the board at the May 25th meeting. Mr. Chair, that is the sum of our recommendations.
Tyler, thank you. And before I open it up to other regions, I do have a question. Knowing we don't have anything in front of us in terms of a PowerPoint presentation like we typically do in an in-person meeting, could you just give us an example of equalizing that lower and upper division tuition that you discussed?
Mr. Chair, I certainly can. And let's take the University of Montana and Montana State University. In FY17, the University of Montana had bifurcated rates for lower for undergraduate students. Lower division students, those freshmen and sophomore, are charged on an academic year for tuition and fees about $6,200. Upper division, about $6,700. All of the students who are undergraduates at the Montana State University were charged about $6,900. So we clearly had a jagged rate for undergraduate education at our flagships. Through the increases that we're recommending in FY18, both MSU and U of M will have a academic tuition and fee rate for resident undergraduate students of $7,047. That produces different rate increases for lower division students at the University of Montana than upper division students at the University of Montana, as well as a different rate for Montana State undergraduate students, all getting them to the same place for FY18, and then taking a slight jump for FY19 to 7,212.
Thank you. Questions from members of the board?
Chair Tuss, I
Yes, Chair Tuss.
Yeah, Regent Johnstone?
Thank you. Tyler, could you provide us a little context about how these new proposed tuition and fee levels will compare us to peers, both with respect to absolute tuition and fees, and I think we've in the past looked at median household income, what percentage of median household income in the various peer states is necessary compared to Montana. Can you give us any context in that?
Mr. Chair, Regent Johnstone, I can. For those two campuses I just spoke of, MSU and U of M, the regional peer average as a group for research doctoral campus in the western campuses in the western states for in-state academic year rates is $8,700. So we would still be close to $1,500 less than the average in the western states. If you take a look at our smaller four-year campuses, our regional four-year campuses, we end up, by the end of FY19, essentially leveling those campuses at $5,900. Their regional peers in the West are at $6,900, so they would be $1,000 lower. And then on the two-year campuses, we are very close to the average there. The regional average is $3,600, and we have six two-year colleges within the MUS, some of those embedded, of course, and four of them would be below that average and two of them slightly above that average. And then to your overall question about comparison to median income, an updated comparison based upon our tuition rates would still have us below that benchmark, which that benchmark is calculated on what percent of median income is made, it would tuition make up. So it's 14% or 15% at the research doctoral level. Our campuses come in slightly lower at 14.6, I believe, or something very close to that. The smaller four-year campuses are still below their benchmark, with our two-year campuses slightly above, and that's exactly where they were coming into this recommendation.
Thank you.
Regent Sheehy, did I hear your voice?
Regent Berkey, maybe.
Oh, Regent Berkey, go ahead, please.
I didn't have anything quite yet.
Okay. Are there other questions?
Sorry, Paul, I'm on mute.
Did you have a question?
No, I'm just on mute.
Okay.
Tyler,
Tyler, I have a question relative to fees. You had mentioned, I believe you had mentioned, mandatory fees and freezing them. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, yes, that is correct. Our recommendation across the system is to freeze those fees. And let me paint a little bit more context into that recommendation. There's a three-pronged reason there. One of them has to do with the variations that we have between campuses. The fund balance of those fees and the need to increase those fees varies widely by campus and by type of fee. In our estimation, the second point is that the need in this this biennium coming forward is to focus on the increase of tuition in order to backfill present law adjustments. And finally, when we take a look at the percentage that our fees make up of the total tuition and fee charge that we have for students, we are at times considerably higher than the national average. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, if I could add quickly to that, a couple other thoughts moving forward. We had a good conversation at the last board meeting about where fees may go, and ultimately trying to relook at those fees and how they're distributed and how they appear across the campuses. I would reiterate that I think we should move forward with a zero increase on the fees for this biennium, but I would also reiterate that I think we should, as a system, look at those mandatory fees and try to come up with something that is a bit of a roadmap for campuses on categories, and then ultimately back to what Tyler just mentioned in terms of how those benchmark in the groups. As you know, we set the stage in September to say part of these decisions have to be based on something. When we look at comparators, we're above them in almost every instance, but our fees are scattered all over, from a handful on some campuses to several handfuls on others. I think we could consolidate those down to a reasonable group, make it easier to compare across the system, and then ultimately easier to compare with peer institutions. So I think the recommendation timeliness is appropriate, and that certainly will be the recommendation from this office, but I'm very committed to looking at those as we move forward.
Commissioner, could you please provide us with some context when we talk about mandatory fees, and that's what we're discussing right now. How does that differ from non-mandatory fees? Can you give us some examples of what would be in both categories?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I can. I would start with this notion, though. The mandatory fees tend to be campus-wide that every student pays, and they're things for building and, in some cases, IT, and there is athletic fees, there's computer fees, equipment fees. In some cases, there's things like IT, and then infrastructure, and then network, and I guess that's some of what I'm saying. We could probably combine those down to be more concise, but they represent a group that is imposed on every student across that campus, as opposed to course fees, or in some case, program fees that are levied for specific items, like a travel cost for a course that's going to spend time in one of the national parks, or a fee for supplies in a welding or culinary arts or some of those other courses. And those are only levied to students that are in those programs. And so while those were not making a recommendation at this time, the mandatory fees, those imposed to everyone, are in that group that we're going to recommend a zero increase. That help clarify?
Yeah, it does. Where do student-initiated fees fall?
So, Mr. Chair, they're in sort of their own little world, and yet they're part of the mandatory fee structure. And I've certainly received feedback from students on this topic, and I've given a fair amount of thought. As you know, they're a mandatory fee that is voted on by the student population. They include things like student government, to sustainability, to other types of fees that are imposed by the students against themselves. And there's certainly been some requests that maybe there would be more flexibility in those student fees. Ultimately, we will separate those out so you can look at those at the board meeting in May. But I do believe that our recommendation at that meeting will likely be consistent with other mandatory fees, and that is that we don't approve increases. I think it's going to be very challenging for me, in good conscience, to say that we're going to make the campuses hold the line on doing things that are incredibly important to students and campus on one hand, and make a different statement for student fees on the other. I think that's that inconsistency is sort of challenging. But I would also say this, we did approve a policy change a year or two ago that allows student fees to be looked at on an annual basis instead of a biennial basis, and there may be some of those student recommendations that could be put off until a time that we're not looking at significant tuition increases that ultimately affect the total cost of education for our students.
Thank you. Additional questions for members of the board?
Mr. Chairman, Bob Nystuen here.
Regent Nystuen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Commissioner, you know, the question I had was, and I think it's worthy of all the regents and the folks listening today, so what campuses are ultimately impacted by the removal of the bifurcation of the lower division and upper division? And it's my understanding it's the University of Montana, Montana Tech, Northern and Western are the main campuses. That's correct?
Mr. Chair, Regent Nystuen, that is exactly correct.
Okay.
And that is a significant change. The one thing I would point out, not that it makes it any easier, but it does not affect a very large group of students across the system because you basically have incoming freshmen that will just start at the new rate. You've got sophomores moving to juniors that would have paid the higher band anyway, so you're really looking at a group of students transitioning from their freshman to sophomore year that would be impacted at this time. The other ones sort of would have been impacted anyway, so it's not a huge cohort, but nonetheless it will be a more significant change for that smaller group of students at those four campuses.
Thank you.
Regent Sheehy?
This is Regent Albrecht.
Oh, I'm sorry, Regent Albrecht.
Question for Tyler. Deputy Commissioner Trevor, if you could speak to how this budget helps to lay out the fiscal sustainability into the future. I mean, when we're looking at a biennium here, and we certainly don't know what the next legislature will do. But can you speak to how this prepares us to be stable and sustainable into the future financially?
Mr. Chair, Regent Albrecht, absolutely. If we start with that notion you just spoke of and the state funding that we can expect from the legislature going forward, we've done well since 2005 to increase our state appropriations. A lot of that through tuition freeze agreements. I think also agreeing to instituting performance funding has aided in that, and we're grateful to our legislative partners and the amount of funding we received. With that said, I think it would be prudent, though, to project going forward that we're not going to see that level of increase again in the near future. So it behooves us to take a look at other revenue streams to make us stronger. And those other revenue streams are tuition. And through tuition revenue and enrollment projections, growth or decline, we can then strategically plan. And it can be done at the programmatic level. And campuses can look inward into their core of what they provide and what they're capable of providing and what they are best at providing and put their coins, if you will, in those buckets and go forward in a strategic manner where they have stronger connection to that revenue stream rather than a formula driven by the state. And I think that's how I would see it in its most simplest form. Going back to getting rid of the lower and upper division, the clarity that that provides for students and for parents and in terms of what it costs to attend higher education also is an advantage for our campuses in conveying those costs. We've heard time and time again the confusion about financial aid and the overall amount that it requires to go to college. I think this allows us the ability to spell that out in its simplest forms to Montanans.
Additional questions?
Chair Tuss, this is Casey. I have more of a comment than a question. Definitely wanted to thank Tyler and Clay and all the hard work you guys have put into looking at different tuition rates, the work over the last year around aligning our campuses by certain mission parameters and mission types, and I know that's certainly informed this conversation around tuition. I just wanted to
underscore the importance and I think a priority of this board around looking deeper into the fees. And I know Clay mentioned that, but I would assume that through the tuition freeze era, there was probably a lot of manipulation around the fees within each campuses, and I would imagine that's why we are above our peers, our regional peers, in terms of the number of fees. So I would really like us to make that commitment within the next year or so to do that wholesale review of the mandatory fees and look at it from the perspective that we've looked at tuition and how it relates to mission type. And so I think if we can put an asterisk or a reminder for, you know, our upcoming meetings to make some progress on looking deep into those fees and use of fees and fund balances and so on and so forth, so we can create an overall policy for the system around how we deal with fees so that we can get them back into alignment with our regional peers.
Thank you, Regent Lozar. Commissioner, do you mind commenting on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Regent Lozar, I guess a few thoughts. I would say that part of the college affordability plan was a pledge from us that we would not manipulate fees, that we would be very prudent on any increases. It did not freeze those fees, but there was certainly guidance from this office, and they ranged during the three different affordability years between 2 and 3%. Anything above that benchmark had to actually come before the board and be presented as a case as to why it may or may not be different. So we actually started at a place higher than our peers and sort of continued on that trajectory through the freeze years, but not out of character. But I will say this, I'm very committed to looking at them because the more time we have spent with them, the more confusing they get. They're kind of all over the board, and for the most part, they're sort of are above where we want to be in terms of comparison. I think they deserve a good look, and we certainly intend to do that. I think the look needs to be not only on the cost of the mandatory fees, but then I think we also need to look a little bit at what do we call fees that maybe should be tuitions. And that's a discussion, actually, if you go way back to Regent Lila Taylor and Regent Lynn Hamilton asked those same questions years ago, and I think we've never quite answered those, and then we got into the college affordability era, and we let that go a bit. But there are some fees that probably should be tuition, and there are some fees that aren't mandatory but are program tuition that probably are more in line with differential tuition. And I think that we need to take a comprehensive look at sort of all of those different categories moving forward. And I really believe that we need to commit to having that work done before we start preparing the next biennial budget. So we can add that in on a more decided basis instead of sort of the what I've deemed as sort of the anecdotal notion of a 2 or 3%, which doesn't really speak to any kind of need. It just sort of speaks to the overall need, and I think we've got to get more detailed than that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Additional questions or comments from members of the board?
Sure, Cass. I have just one, I guess, comment or two. One, I think this is a very responsible effort on the part of the commissioner's office to address the financial challenges that we're facing. We've got 3 weeks here. I'm sure that we're going to get input and comment from the campuses and the public, and I think that's appropriate for Regent. And the second comment, I guess, would be that I hope that while we've addressed what we believe are the 18 and 19 fiscal year issues, that we continue with a very great sense of urgency relative to our program prioritization initiative, and particularly with respect to some of the campuses that are more challenged. I think it's absolutely essential that we do that, and I hope that the board is committed to that and the commission and the campuses are committed to moving forward on that program prioritization initiative as urgently as possible, because I think it needs to be done. I think there's some systemic issues within the system and within some campuses that absolutely need to be addressed.
Regent Johnston, I would just underscore that. I think that that's an absolute high priority of this board, and we have every expectation that, those efforts will continue. Thank you for that comment.
Mr. Chairman, could you comment on that briefly?
Yes, please.
So it's sort of our fourth bullet, and we can return any part of the recommendations, but a couple thoughts along those lines. I think Regent Johnstone is absolutely spot on with the need for urgency, but it's not just for the campuses with budget challenges. I think we need that same urgency and that same look in terms of prioritizing who we are and who we're going to be across the system. I've spoke to this a number of times, but certainly from a national perspective, that is very relevant in Montana. Revenue in the future remains challenging. And while I would like to think that what we experienced in the 2017 budget in terms of reductions is the exception, not the rule, I certainly lay awake a bit concerned that that may be more of the rule. And that certainly has been the rule across the country. We're one of only three states that have not experienced significant reductions, and I still would leave us in that other category. 2% is not pleasant, but it's not the double-digit reductions that many, if not most, states have seen. I think that in this climate, likelihood of increased revenue in any substantial way from the federal government is bleak. I think the abilities of the state is going to be quite restrictive. And I think we've all come to the reality a few years back that we've hit a point of tuition elasticity that starts to affect the ability of Montana students to participate. And we don't want to stop out students. Now, that's a real concern that we did in making these recommendations, is we don't want to raise tuition by a few percent and knock students out entirely. We ultimately end up losing more revenue than we gain, and that's been largely debated amongst the chief financial officers, this office, you know, where there's elasticity. And maybe since we start at the bottom of the national average, there's a bit more room in Montana, but there's not much, and we're committed to affordability, and there's almost none when you look at the bite out of median household income. And so I think we've got to be committed to the expense side of this equation, and ultimately that means how are we going to prioritize, how are we going to be the best institutions we can be, serving students with relevant programs across the system, where those students are and where they are attending, and what they seek. I just think that is completely appropriate. I also ended my comments at both the legislative full of probes hearing and finance and claims, assuring legislature that while we start at a very low spot in terms of student funding, we have not give up and will not from this office on making sure that we remain as efficient as we can be. I think that means looking across the system at program prioritization. I think it means, in a large way, looking across the system at shared services and how we as a system can do the back office work, the compliance work that is essential to the operations, but how we can do it on a much more consolidated basis, saving as many dollars as possible for student services, for instruction. And so while I think we've been very prudent, I want to make sure that we do not lose sight of prioritization, that we don't lose sight of what will be a very constricted both revenue estimates moving forward, but also demographic projections moving forward in terms of new full-time, first-time freshmen. There's a lot of challenges for us, and so we stay conservative and we continue to look at the expense side of the equation.
Thank you, Commissioner. Regent Nystuen, did I hear your voice?
Yes, you did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we get a little bit of texture with regards to the tuition and fee recommendations for the two-year campuses as well as the non-resident? Tyler, I think you put some work into those particular areas, and I think it's important that we have an initial conversation about tuition and fees at the two-year colleges and the certainly for non-residents.
Sure. So let's start with the, Mr. Chair, Regent Nystuen, let's start with the two-year college tuition rate recommendations. Across the board, except for one campus, we recommend a 5% increase to tuition, which equates to between a 3.3 and 4% increase on tuition and fees in both years of the biennium for our two-year campuses. That, on an annual basis, ranges between about $118 annually, increasing to about $125. So put in perspective, $75 a semester. The fee rates, which we obviously just talked about in terms of freezing those, I think is incredibly important at some of those two-year campuses that have a ratio of fees to the overall cost of tuition and fees upwards of 30 to 35% of the cost. The national average for tuition and fees for two-year campuses in that same ratio is 14%. So those campuses are a long way out of whack. Then, Regent Nystuen, I believe you mentioned the talk about non-resident tuition increases. And, again, those vary by campus and by level. But in general, we stayed with the leveling principle, working to get campuses with similar missions to have similar out-of-state rates. Though it's difficult to move some of them completely the same by the end of the biennium, we get within $400 or $500 of each other. Also, the thing to know about non-resident rates is that we use a discounting factor on non-residents in particular to attract them to our campuses. So those rates tend to vary on a wider level than a resident rate. Regent Nystuen, I'd be happy to go into more detail if you need more.
No, I think that's okay. The other part of this is certainly we understand with non-resident undergrads, you know, the discounting that occurs and the waivers and some of those kinds of things. So, again, I think that needs to still stay on the front burner as far as where we're going as far as governance and setting policy as to what's appropriate these days.
Additional comments or questions from members of the board?
Yeah, Chair Tuss, this is Casey.
Yes.
In March, Clay and Tyler shared with us the, I think it was an agreement between OT and the governor and the joint approach on this benchmarking of the cost state appropriation to resident FTEs across the system. So I think it would be helpful based on when we get into the particulars of the recommendations by campus, you know, in 2 weeks, to see that comparison to what we had during the legislative session and what we're proposing, just to see what those comparisons are, because I know that I assume our legislators would be interested in seeing that adjustment.
Mr. Chair, Regent Lozar, more than happy to address that. And we didn't talk about those, so I wouldn't mind just taking a few comments on those, that shared policy goal. One thing, unlike maybe the College Affordability Plan, which was a MOU that we executed, we talked about this in March, but we did the shared policy goals. I understand the legislative perspective that they want to make sure they're sending taxpayer dollars across the state in some balanced form, and we understand that perspective, and we'll work that way over some amount of time. But we certainly can have more on those bands when we come back at the May meeting.
Yes.
Excellent. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Commissioner. Additional comments or questions? No comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, if there aren't any, I would just simply say we realize this presentation is a little bit clunky trying to do on a conference call. Hopefully everyone can see past that a little bit at the true hope to be as transparent with this and allow as much time for feedback, comment, and student input while they're still on campus for the next few days and to next week or so for some. But I really do appreciate the accelerated effort from the campuses and certainly from Tyler and his crew to get this information as early as possible and available as possible. We truly are seeking input from both the campuses, and we're glad to have more conversations with campus leadership on individual budgets, but also from the public. We'll create a email address on the OG website in some reasonably fashion that's easily found on there. We're going to create an email address that's tuition@montana.edu, and we will make certain that comments get distributed to board members if they come in on that site. We've been doing it with a few other topics. It actually works pretty well, and we can distribute that out so you all can hear from students and their families across the system. And we'll certainly take comments in any form that anybody wants to weigh in on where we're going. I think that this is a budget that's not going to be overly pleasing to anyone in particular, but is responsible in terms of something we can recommend to you all as board members that is exactly what we told the legislature we would probably end up with, and that is some combination of cuts, the programs and services, and some combination of an increased tuition to students trying to balance their needs and quality of our institutions as best we can with affordability and access, and I think that's what we will have ready for you in May, and appreciate allowing us to preview it to the board over this conference call, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm particularly pleased, and you and I talked about this prior to this conference call, about the effort at outreach and creating that new mechanism. I'm assuming on OG's website and creating that new email, because obviously it's a somewhat awkward time for our student population throughout the MUS given the end of the academic year. So I would simply emphasize doing as much outreach from your office and as individual members of the board as well to publicize the fact that we do have that newly created email address for students and others throughout Montana that would like to comment on our proceedings. Additional comments or questions from members of the board?
Paul, I have one. This is Martha.
Yes, Regent Sheehy.
I suggest that we at least make ourselves available on campus to hear from any students who are able to get there or campus leaders. I think the email is great, but I do think we should have some in-person listening sessions.
Thank you, Regent Sheehy. That's a good recommendation, and given where we are located, most of us, we're not that far from different campuses in the system. Thank you for that.
I think we could divide them up and set dates and just be available for a couple of hours should anyone care to meet with you.
Sure.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the email certainly isn't meant to supplant that. That's a good idea. I want to make sure that students have an opportunity to get to us any way they want, given they're in finals and many of them departing soon, but we can work with the campuses to try to make space available and have time available if regents are available for that as well.
And I would certainly remind everybody on this call that our individual emails are available through OG's website.
That's correct.
Additional comments or questions from members of the board? Commissioner, do you any additional comments or questions from you?
Mr. Chair, that's all we have.
Well, let me take the opportunity at this point then to open it up to any public comment that may exist for folks that have phoned into this conference call. Is there any public comment?
This is Gail Schanzler at the Bozeman Chronicle. I could really use some of Tyler's information in writing. I'm hoping that there's some kind of a PowerPoint or page of information that will show the new tuition rates and explain the budget explanation that he gave verbally. It's a lot of numbers to keep straight, so anything that you could send in writing would be greatly appreciated.
Mr. Gale, thank you for that comment. And Tyler, you did mention earlier that following the adjournment of this conference call meeting, that you're going to have available, I believe, through OG's website, a presentation. Is that correct? Do I got that right?
Yes, Mr. Chair. From MUS.edu, there will be a link to it. It's going to be on the Border Regents portion of the website. If you're looking for it, there'll be a presentation, and then there'll also be a detailed spreadsheet on the tuition matrices, and then a campus-by-campus profile giving you the tuition increases, the effect on the budget, the enrollment projections, and the operating budget metrics.
Mr. Chair, we're working on the logistics, but we also intend to post the audio link as soon as we can from this call today, so if people want to re-listen to portions of it, they certainly can. I think we can have it up on the site, that portion, about 24 hours from now.
That's right. I had forgot about that. Thank you for that reminder. Additional
Chairman,
public comment?
Mr. Chairman, this is Sheila in Missoula, and I just want to clarify, I'm sure it's crystal clear to everybody, but it just helps me, that what you'll be posting is still to a degree in worksheet form until you've had your listening sessions, and is that right, and had a chance for various of our constituent groups to mull all this over, including yourselves?
Mr. Chair, Madam President, I said earlier, but you're absolutely right. Just to be clear, this isn't the official posting of what will be the action item for the May meeting. This is simply posting a draft. And we will continue to work on that. It almost certainly will have some changes. I think I said earlier, we don't look for broad changes of the structure, but continue to work with campuses on a daily basis to hone this in. And that's part of the clunkiness. I want to make sure everybody does know it's a draft, and will remain there until we post it as an agenda item for the May meeting a few days before the meeting. It's a work in progress.
Thank you, President Stearns, for that question. Additional public comment? Additional public comment? Okay, with that, I'd like to once again thank everybody for your time today on this conference call, and I will now adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.